Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 86th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. Just want to welcome everyone back to the podcast. And as you listen to this week's episode, we want to encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars. We love seeing those conversations.
And we are very thrilled to have this week's guest, which is Pramod Sharma, who is the CEO and co-founder of the educational and toy company Osmo. He is an engineer who graduated from Stanford and spent 8 years at Google architecting book scanning machines and held senior management roles in search, Gmail, and distributed computing before starting Osmo. So Pramod, thank you for being with us here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So let's just go ahead and start with just learning a little bit about you. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? All that kind of stuff.
I grew up in India, north part of India. And I've been to all the public schools as I was growing up. And then I went to college called IIT Delhi. That's in Delhi. And all my childhood, my parents are farmers. And so I had a lot of freedom growing up. So for me, education, or it was all about learning on your own. I had very little pressure growing up as a child, and so that's where, like, I would love to talk more as you guys have more questions. But pretty much, I spent most of my childhood in north part of India. Did my undergrad. Spent a year in Japan. At some point, there was a start of very excited about doing computer vision, AI, graphics. This was in 2001 in Tokyo, and somehow I knew the people, and they were like excited, why don't you come over and spend a year in Tokyo. So I spent a year in Tokyo, then I came to Stanford. This is where I spent a lot of my time learning, sort of tinkering around different ideas around computer vision, graphics. And at the field at that point was still pretty mature, I would say. When I compare what you can do today. And after Stanford, I joined Google, and as you mentioned in your earlier intro, the big part of my stay at Google was, the things that I'm really proud of was Google Book Scanning Machine, where the goal of the project was scan every single book. So we were trying to go from every book offline to online. And it was extremely ambitious, something that kept us very inspired, just the idea of every single book, every bit of knowledge become online,
right?
And challenge there was how do you do that? Like, how do you do in a way that you can scale it? There are millions and millions of books. How do you scale in terms of time it takes to do that, as well as amount of money you need to invest into it? So spend a lot of time there, and then did a lot of stuff at Google. Google was an amazing place. You move very quickly, you try a project, and didn't work out, you fetch anything else. So Google is very iterative, and me growing at Google was also, like, I tried many, many things at Google. And about 2 years back, I started Osmo.
So thinking back to the Google project, is the book project still going on, where they're scanning books and trying to digitize all the books? Is that still happening, or is that a dead project?
I think, I'm trying to be careful with what I say. I think at some point Google got into this litigation issues with authors, publishers, and I think that is on hold right now. But we did scan a ton of books already, so I think Google has a lot of content that is digitized.
What was the best part about working at Google? Because, I mean, we hear these stories. I hear these stories all the time. Like, people are like, oh my gosh, Google's the best company. You get to do all these crazy things. There's all these. So in your mind, what was the best part about working there?
I think the thing that I love was transparency. Google is, like when I was there, it's extremely transparent. So you can figure out what's happening in the company overall. You can actually feel that you have the right to go to a founder and ask a question. And that was very normal. Like, the people at Google, at leadership team, was extremely accessible to people. And I think that makes it a place where you have an idea, you can talk to someone. You have a feedback, you can give feedback to anyone. And I think that become very empowering for anyone working there. So the transparency is something I really admire at Google. And something, even at my current place, we try to strive for that level of transparency.
Cool. So how did the idea of Osmo come about?
I think many. I think whenever you create something, the way I think of creation is you're connecting dots. You're connecting bunch of dots, and in the creation of Osmo, there are a bunch of dots that were going in our head at that time. And so one of them was, I have a daughter, she loves playing on iPad. And I have this angle of, as a parent, what is the right tech for my child? Because as a parent, you care a lot about sort of getting an experience that's fostering the mind of a child. So I started thinking about what the right way to introduce tech to my child. She loves iPad, but I didn't feel comfortable when she just spending with the Facebook, the screen, and disconnected from the world around. There was one, I would say, dot. The second dot was working in books. I had a lot of experience going offline to online. And I was thinking about, is there a way to bring iPad experience into the real world so that the experience is no longer disconnected, become multi-sensory? And that was more of a technical insight. And the two things, like one, like as a parent, looking at what is the right way to introduce tech for a child, and then having the technical insight or technical capabilities around how do you make that happen. And more at that point, and I can talk a little bit about thinking that was going on. One of the big ideas that was going in my head at that point was, if you look for tech as an adult, so for an adult, tech is very positive. Like, I feel proud that, oh, I have a fancy PC, a fancy laptop that I used to do my work. And if it's for creation or communication or commute, for every single aspect of our life is now transformed by tech. And we feel very proud of it. As an adult, I feel so proud. I'm a tech savvy person, and it's very powerful thing to say. But when you think of children, a tech in the context of children typically comes out. And I'm making a bit of a generalization here is, oh, it's a screen time. In fact, parents feel proud that, or even educators, that in our place, there is no tech. So I find this pretty puzzling, this idea of why tech hasn't been so powerful, so transformative, when it comes to changing how children grow up. And how can we use or build the kind of tech where as an educator, as a parent, you feel proud that this is awesome. Instead of learning something in the course of X amount of time, now children are learning something in 10X faster. Because mm-hmm. this is what text does. Text makes us more efficient, it makes things faster, it makes things more accessible. So this was the big idea that was going ahead. Like, how do you design tech in a way that the children growing up, the process can be amplified in a multiple way. And this is the core idea we still have. And I think the implementation we have at Osmo right now is, this is the angle we're taking is, what is the native tech for children? And that's how the Osmo was, the whole idea was sort of came about, and we've been iterating a lot. And I'm generally extremely thankful to educators and school a lot, because I don't think I ever said publicly, but we had almost little understanding in the beginning about how does Osmo fits in education, why this is education, what is multi-sensory. This idea of multi-sensory wasn't around, actually. We had the gut feel, but I had no word for that, actually. Mm-hmm. So we have been working, like, once we had the basic idea of Osmo, had basic prototype, and we started talking to just giving a demo to teachers, and we got a ton of feedback and ton of support. And I think once we got this loop right, the feedback loop, we've been iterating crazy since then. And I feel we're still very early stage of that.
So if you had to describe Osmo to somebody who's listening who may not know what Osmo is, how would you describe it?
It's an extremely hard question, actually. I typically ask people to watch the video. But the way I describe is, we are taking the iPad experience or the digital experience beyond screen into the real world. So instead of interacting on a screen, you are using physical objects, the space in front of it, you're playing with other people. So we're trying to make the iPad experience or digital experience a lot more interactive, tangible, physical. Right. That's one way I try to explain. But as is true of any new idea, it's actually much harder for people to sort of grasp it unless you actually try it out.
Well, and I really think it's one of those products that it makes total sense once you see it in action and you play with it, because then you're like, this is amazing, because I know that I was lucky with my students to be one of the beta testers, and it was such a cool idea to use the iPad but also have this tangible piece that you were holding in your hands that wasn't tech, and to merge those two together, that it was something that never even crossed my mind.
Yeah, I think I feel the way things evolve over time is it takes a while for people to understand and grasp the idea, but once people grasp the idea, it moves much faster.
Right.
And I think we're at the early stage. In general, if you look at the evolution of tech, I feel the distance between tech and your life is decreasing over time. Mm-hmm. Tech is coming bigger and bigger part of our lives. If you look back 10 years back, I think the role of tech was kind of very far, not really accessible. And I think it's coming very, very, like coming in every aspect of life. And I feel education, learning is an area where the reason it actually all made sense to us in the beginning was learning is such, I think the education as well, is such a rich process, because by design, you want to learn different things. You want to try different things and you want to learn everything. So it's very, you cannot actually build a singular experience that will work for learning. Over time, many, many experiences, such as, you know, like playing with blocks, for example, or playing with tiles, or using pen and paper and all kind of physical tools, these tools have evolved over centuries. And one of the things that we realize is they've been evolved, and there are multiple different tools, whether it's building or expressing yourself. They evolved over hundreds of years. You can't have a single experience replacing everything. So somehow, everything that has been around, some of the tech has to make those tools somehow more relevant, better in certain aspects. And that's why the idea of physical and digital kind of starting to make sense, like why this is important. But if you think of just merging for the sake of merging, that might not be interesting. And I always try to be very careful that our goal is not really we are tech people and we want to merge these two worlds for the sake of doing it, but we realize that there's no better way of creating the right experience than sort of connecting these two the two ways of doing things.
So originally the product was called Tangible Play. What was up with the name change?
So Tangible Play was new to the company. And
okay.
In the beginning, I think when we were talking to you guys, it was mostly two engineers and Karen, and yeah, three engineers and Karen. So it's a bit like a bunch of nerdy people. We didn't even think of branding, actually. Like, we were going to build the best possible product. And at some point we realized, now we have to explain this to the whole world. How do you explain it? And okay. At that point, we were actually forced. Yeah, I remember there was a 2-week notice before the launch of Osmo to come up with a name. And because we couldn't figure out that you will say, I want to buy Tangible Play. It wouldn't make sense, but Tangible Play was the name of the company. And that was a proxy for the name of the product. So we start thinking about the name, a name of the product that kids will love. And in fact, I'm extremely thankful to our beta community, because the way we picked the name was we went to one of our beta school in Bay Area, and we had four different candidates, and we went to a first grade classroom, and I was actually there personally, and I just put on a whiteboard, like, there are four different names, and just ask it, like, what do you guys, like, just pick them. And they had this small piece of paper, each one of them, and they had the first choice, second choice, third choice. And I think after 17 out of 23 kids preferred Osmo.
So that's cool.
That's legit, actually. Like, okay.
That's such a neat way to have the name be decided, is by just talking to kids. I mean, it's totally reflective of kind of the philosophy of the company. And I know that since releasing, y'all have gotten a ton of really great publicity from a lot of really large organizations. I've seen you on all kinds of sites be featured, and it's just – It's been fun to watch, being part of the beta community before it was even out there in the public, and then now seeing all these people eating it up. What is kind of your biggest goal when creating a product like Osmo?
I'm thinking, because it's a it's a good question. It's a difficult one to pick. It's the biggest goal. When we are doing our beta testing in the beginning days, and when I was going to classrooms, it was very, early last year. And in the beginning, we were tech people, like you know, our background engineers. At some point, I saw the smile in children's faces when they were playing with the product. That you can feel that joy. And I saw the same joy. I do clearly remember from the school when I talked to teachers. They saw the joy of, okay, this totally makes sense and this is the right thing. And to me, it gave us a purpose at that point. Like before that was kind of, I would say, a dry sort of mission. But at that point I realized when I started seeing children and seeing Osmo becoming a tool in their life, a very powerful tool that makes a positive impact, that I started realizing that there's nothing better than that for us as a company if we can get more of it. So the goal right now is we do know that what we are beginning to introduce with Osmo and many other things we have in the pipeline have the potential to impact children's life. Now the goal I have is how do I scale that? So my goal is like, how do I increase the impact? How do I make it accessible not to 1,000 or kids, but to every single kid? And that to me is, given we believe that the product brings smile in children's faces, and everything we judge is, we always look at for every single idea. In fact, we have launched 3 games, but we're working on quite a few other things based on a lot of the feedback and requests we got from our community. And for every single thing, my ultimate answer is, let's put this in front of kids and see what they think. Let's talk to them. And to me, I want to make sure the Osmo is optimized for children. It's like a native children product. And it truly fits into their lifestyle, like how kids play.
Right.
So that's the goal, is always centered around making that happen and then scaling it.
So you're not currently in education as far as being an educator, but when you look back at your own education, what kinds of qualities did your favorite teachers possess?
I can talk a lot, actually. I've been deeply inspired from some of my teachers, like deeply, deeply inspired. There are two, if I remember my pre-high school education, not the college education, there were two that changed. I think I will actually give a lot of the credit of where I have come so far in my life, I think in terms of contribution to society, to those two teachers, and especially to one of them. At some point, one of my teachers, he saw some talent in me as a kid, and I remember it was very young. He saw some talent, and I think we had this conversation, and somehow he was able to communicate to me the belief he had, the abilities and the skills and the potential he saw in me. And I think when I saw that somebody else has confidence about me, and that I think that confidence was extremely crucial for me to build a trust in myself. And once you have a trust in yourself, I think you go very, very far. You try a lot of things. But I think that the role the teacher played was just communicating where I could go in a way that was accessible to me as a child at that point.
Right.
And I do remember there was one teacher, he just actually spent extra time with me. I do remember clearly on things I was good at. And he was just pushing me hard. And I even today, and it was ninth grade, and I still remember then. I remember the time really well, because that changed me completely about, I can do stuff now. And I think that's a bigger role, I guess, teachers play, much more than the technical skills you can give your child. But I think you, clearly in this case, you can change how they think of life fundamentally. And I think that's a big deal.
So when you look at schools and classrooms and the way they're designed now, how do you look at it and say, oh man, if I was back in school, I would totally want my classroom to look like this? How do you think classrooms could be designed to better meet the needs of kids now?
I'm not an expert, so
No. If you could go back to school now, what would you want your class to look like? What are things that you remember?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back and see things that helped me as a person, like growing up, like whether working at Google or doing a startup now, and try to see what skills really mattered.
Yeah.
And if I had to pick one skill, by far, the most important skill I think is valuable is an ability to inspire people to work with you and to help you out. Because it's very rare in life you will go by to very far just by yourself. It's actually very hard. I feel like most of the big innovations or most big steps have happened because a group of people somehow came up with this amazing idea, and then they attracted another set of people to join them, and suddenly you have this big movement going on. So this idea of like, how can you take an idea and inspire other people to join you and collaborate in a very deep level with the trust and loyalty. That skill is extremely invaluable, and I think it's required for any big change you want to do in society. So if I go back and if I look at the classroom experience, I would say the idea of the level of connection you make to your classmates and to the teacher, and more of an emotional connection, that I think is extremely a powerful skill. So I think the collaboration part of education is, to me, is one thing that I would say I wish we had more of it, or I wish every classroom had more of it, is the idea of like you want kids to feel connected and have the skill of inspiring each other, because that's what's going to be extremely valuable down the line.
Thinking back to the last year, what's one of the biggest things you've learned in the last year?
There's a lot.
That's generally an educator question.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing I learned was we know very little as humans. That's more of a philosophical comment. But how little we know about future. And every single step I realized, you have an idea of a game, you put the game in front of kids and you realize what works, what doesn't. It's extremely hard to predict. It's extremely hard to predict what's really going to take off, what's really not going to take off, because these problems are extremely complex. So one of the things that we have learned now is we're trying to build this humility as an organization, as a company, that we know very little. But we are going to work very hard with the right set of people to understand what is the right solution, what is the right product. So I focus a lot more now on a beta program, a beta community. I focus a lot more on the word community now. The community now, because I realize that if you want to make any meaningful impact, you need a lot of help. And just because these are hard problems. And especially in a children's space, what we learn is every child is different. Some things might work really well for a 4-year-old, but that might not work for the same thing might not work even for an 8-year-old, because they might be at a very different spot. And I think I'm starting to appreciate the challenge you guys are facing, actually, which is how do you design a program that actually works with a set of kids? When everyone comes from a different background, they have different families, they have a very different life behind the scene. And how do you build something? And I think I have a lot more appreciation about not knowing, and now this idea of let's try to figure this out. So generally, like now I wouldn't say I'm less confident, but I'm a lot more open to the idea of we will figure something out down the line. Mm-hmm. This we don't know it today.
Well, one of the questions that we always like to end our show on is, what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
I'm thinking, actually. There are many, many things I'm passionate about. Clearly, the thing that I would say one of the most important things that I'm passionate about is what gets children excited to do something? Like, what inspires children? Well, like, what's I've seen as an adult as well, is if I pay my mind to something, I generally solve it. I generally, like, I learn the most when my mind is at something. Like, mine is extremely focused. And I'm very curious to see, how do you get kids focused on things that are good for them? An extremely hard problem. Like, everything we design, we always ask this question on what will get kids excited about doing this activity for a very long time. And let's say an example of even the games we launched right now is, when the game is Tengam game, what will get kids to make these shapes over and over again? Mm-hmm. And I realized that that's actually not an easy answer. Because once you nail that down, I think a lot of things are much easier. Like, yeah, every single thing is, to me, easier once you figure out the engagement piece of what will get kids love what they're doing right now.
Right.
And this, the love aspect, is, I think, is extremely... I find it very hard to grasp it just yet. And I'm passionate about learning about space.
Awesome.
That's very great. So thank you so much, Pramuth, for joining us this evening. So how can listeners connect with you? Can you give us a link to your website, maybe a Twitter handle or something?
You can go to playosmo.com, www.playosmo.com.
Okay.
You can go to Google and search for Osmo, O-S-M-O, and you can magically find us. and I think can I ask something to your community, like help?
Sure. Is that
fair? So I'm always given the space of education is new to us, we're learning. And you ask us what's our number one goal, which is how do we scale that smile and that excitement we see in children from like one classroom or one school to sort of everywhere. And I actually don't know how to do that. I really don't know. As a startup, as a small company, how do I scale the impact into the school system? I'm always interested in learning about that. And because you guys are living in the system and we are from the outside, and I always think as an engineer, how do I scale this? How do I in a word of Google, it's actually fairly easy because you send everyone a link and it's done. But I don't know about Google. So I'm always curious to see how do I increase the impact, the penetration of Osmo into schools, given what we're building is relevant, because I would not push anything that's not relevant to the school system. Mm-hmm. So I'm always looking for ideas, and I'm always requesting people to send us ideas if we have any.
Great. Well, then we'll definitely encourage our listeners, if they have ideas, to tweet y'all or to contact you via your website.
Awesome.
Great. And then if you'd like to connect with us, you can find us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ. You can also find our website, EduAllStars.com, and then search up past episodes on iTunes, searching out EduAllStars with no spaces.
And you can join us for our next episode as we interview Dave Patrick. So, Pramuth, thank you again for coming on with us. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.